This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's great to be back in town and in the hot seat again.
Yes.
I've been gone for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
1 week I went down to the shuttle launch down in Florida. That, of course, is the launch that never happened.
Yeah.
So I simply enjoyed the Florida beach down there. And then I just came back from Costa Rica. I looked at the Costa Rica technology situation down there. I'll get into that a little bit later.
I'm glad you were, so that way you can write it off as a business expense.
Because
right?
Well, of course, I was actually, they have an Intel plant down there. And I looked at their phone system. And I'll talk about how they've managed the economy and why they're, surprisingly, their unemployment rate is between 4 and 7%. So it's a very well-run country. I had no idea. It's between Panama and Nicaragua.
Are you thinking about opening your own another campus down
well,
there?
Well, it does look inviting down
yeah,
there.
I bet.
It does look very inviting. It's the size of Virginia. So I'll get into that a little later. There's been a lot of stuff going on. The Chromebook is out. That,
uh-huh.
That of course, is the new... is the new netbook, which uses the Google Chrome operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll feature a big historical event this show. The last typewriter factory has closed in the world.
I didn't even realize there was still one.
I know, and there's a big brouhaha between Facebook and Google. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
Somebody at Facebook exercised some really bad, bad judgment. Microsoft purchased Skype.
Yeah.
And they really overpaid for it.
I'm glad you're bringing this up. That's quite a price tag.
And we'll talk about Osama bin Laden and what he had in his computers and the only the digital content.
Yeah.
In his bedroom, nothing else.
Yikes.
But now it is time for.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, and it's a very big, big mailbag today. Oh, it's extremely
yes.
full. We have an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, Friday afternoon after a long, stressful week with a lot of deadlines, I lost a Word 07 file. Now, I always understood that Word automatically backed up the document as I worked, but now I don't have it. I've got to rebuild this document over the weekend. What's my best way to keep this from happening again? Also, I have another problem with Word. When a subject matter expert sends me a Word document as an email attachment, I'll open it up and I'll edit it. And then I'll go back later and look at the attachment, and all my edits are gone. What's going on there? Is my Word not working right? What's happening? Well, Lauren, you have what I call a document management problem. You don't know where the programs are storing your files.
Right.
So I've got to go through some of the basics here.
That's a good point.
I'll go through some of the basics here. Many times people, they save a document, they don't know where it is, and so they say, I've lost it, and it's in a subdirectory somewhere. It's somewhere.
This is not where you think it is.
That's right. Now, first of all, your Word program is configured to save all the documents in a particular subdirectory. Usually it's called the document subdirectory, but you can configure it to save it in a particular subdirectory. If you've saved it in another subdirectory previously, it will remember the previous subdirectory, and it will go back to that same subdirectory. So you want to make certain it's being saved to the document subdirectory. Because if you change directories, it will remember that, and you might be saving it someplace that
on
you don't know where it is.
The desktop or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So chances are, now, it turns out also, and I'm going to get how you can change these things, that Microsoft Word, by default, saves your material about every 10 minutes. Now, you can actually change that auto-save time period, and I'll show you how to configure that a little bit later. But it's probably saved every 10 minutes, so somewhere on your hard drive. Now, what I would suggest you do is go to the search button, and you want to search the full document. So you go to the advanced search, select the full document. Say you're only going to search .docs, or DocX, whatever the extension is for the Word documents, and then find a unique word combination within the document, and then search for that word combination, and then your search function will probably find the missing document somewhere. That's if you don't know where it is, that's always a good way to find
it.
Now, what you can do is you can, if you want to find out, if you want to adjust the autosave to make faster than 10 minutes, you go on your open up Word, then go to Tools, and then under Tools, click on Options, and under Options, there will be a tab called File Location. Click on File Location, or rather, there's a tab called Save Tab, because we're talking about, and you click on the Save Tab, and under, so it's Tools, Options, Save Tab, and then on the Save Tab page, you have an autosave interval, and you can change that. It's normally set for 10 minutes. If you want to have it autosave in every 2 minutes, just change it to every 2 minutes, and it will autosave for you there. If you want to check where your files are automatically saved to, what the default document subdirectory is, then you want to do this. You want to go to Tools again, and then Options, and this time File Location tab, and then you'll see all the subdirectories where documents are saved, and you can change those if you want, but that's where they would normally be. So I suspect that you saved the document in a different subdirectory. You don't know where it is. Now let's talk about these email attachments. That's a special case. I've got a lot of people at Stratford who I won't name, who are always losing their edits on email attachments. You see, if you get an email attachment, and then you open it up, it doesn't put it into the document subdirectory. It creates a temporary subdirectory, and it puts it there because it assumes that you're just going to look at it. You're not going to do anything with it. Now, if you edit that document, you're editing the version in the temporary subdirectory. And these have got weird names. And the idea is, of course, when you clean up your hard disk, you'll just erase all those subdirectories. Right. And it opens up all these weird-looking names. Now, if you then open up that email attachment again, it will save the raw email attachment, which is unchanged, to another temporary subdirectory. So the only way to recover the particular edited file that you have is you got to go to the temporary subdirectory and find it, and that will have your edits. Now, this is what I normally do whenever I'm going to edit a file attachment. Before I do the editing, I save as, and I save it to my document subdirectory, so I know where it is. And then I open up the file that's in the document subdirectory, and I edit that file.
And that way it goes back.
And then when I send it back to the person, I attach that file that I just edited to the email and send it back.
Right.
And I never use the temporary subdirectories for edited content. This is a very, very typical problem. And so I think it's just a document management issue. And I think you can find your documents if you'd go and look for it.
Right.
Because it's because your computer didn't crash, so it's unlikely that it just disappeared. But great email, Lauren. We have an email from Arnie. Hi, Dr. Schertz. I recently read a technology called OLED that's going to make big changes in the TV market. It's going to take much away from plasma, from LED, from LCDs that are hanging on the walls in our homes. I suppose it'll be a green technology as well. It may have many advantages over existing technology. Would you explain OLED, what it's all about, and how it will affect the future? Well, OLED is organic light-emitting diode. It's actually a polymer. The nice thing is that it's a polymer that actually acts like a semiconductor. So it's a light-emitting diode in polymers. And the beauty of polymers are, you can spray them on. You can put them on like with inkjet kind of technologies.
Really?
And so it can be very, you can make a large scale display. Now, actually, it's an electroluminescent polymer diode. Now, the first diode device was reported by Eastman Kodak by Ching Tang and Stephen Van Slyke in 1987. Ching Tang. It's actually Ching W. Tang.
Ah, gotcha.
I don't think they named. I don't think they made the Tang.
Nope.
They didn't name Tang juice after.
I don't think so. No.
And it was in 1987. Now the problem. So they got this thing to light up, but they had to put about a 500 to 1,000 volts across it to get it to light because it was very high resistance. So it actually wasn't very efficient.
Right.
It wasn't until 1990, 3 years later, that J.H. Burroughs at the Cavendish Laboratory in Cambridge reported a high-efficiency green light-emitting polymer using a device that was only 100 nanometers thick. So it was very thin, and it was actually a polymer, polyphenylene.
And, nice try.
Yeah, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Thank you very much. Organic chemistry was not my forte.
You're a physicist, man.
But the beauty of this, because it was a very thin film, it was low voltage and high efficiency. So that's actually the technology that was used. And you can dope this polymer up to get different colors like blue, green, red. And so this is actually at each pixel, they've got the three colors, blue, green, and red. And so, depending on what the color is, you can do this thing. Now, the beauty of these particular devices is that they are scalable to very large sizes. They're very fast. They're much faster than liquid crystal displays. They've got a much faster response time. Mm-hmm. So you can do high-speed things. Now, they've got a problem in that they don't have the lifetime of a liquid crystal display. But they're working on that as they get lower and lower voltage operating. So, and they're actually at this moment more expensive than LCDs, but the technology is just ramping up. Ultimately, this technology is going to be cheaper. It's going to scale to much larger sizes. And because it's flexible, you'll be able to make a TV screen that could fit on your clothes. You see? Because it's flexible. Or you could wrap it around a curve.
I was going to say you could wrap it around the corner of a room.
That you could, and so this,
in
this,
two different places.
And so, or you could have a display that you just roll up and put in your backpack and unroll it. So it is going to be the dominant technology. So that's the organic light emitting diode. It's been around for a while, but now it's finally getting to production. That was a great question. Now we had a second. Now, yeah, that was the second thing. Oh, we got a letter from email from Ron.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Dr. Schertz, I know you have a fondness for the latest and greatest, but today I hope you can help me with a question about the oldest and coldest. My concern is backward compatibility. If and when my small business finally replaces our old reliable 2004 XP Dell computer desktops with new Windows 7 desktops. Now, when we switch to the new Windows 7, can we still keep running our old business software? He says, now I want to run Lotus 1-2-3 that was written for Windows 98, version 9.8, and I want to run Adobe Acrobat 7.0. So the thing is, hey, I just lost my... So what he wants to do then is find a way to run the old software that will not run on Windows 7 on Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he says, I know I can do a dual boot where I can either boot up in Windows 7 or boot up in Windows XP. He says, well, is there a better way? Now, he has a second part of the question. I've also got a heavy-duty HP LaserJet 5M printer with only a serial and a parallel port, and the new computers only have USB ports. How can I handle that? Because I want to use the same printer. Thanks always for your wise advice. Even to us aging throwbacks who stubbornly try to resist planned obsolescence, Ron. Well, Ron, you are in luck. Windows 7 supports the XT mode as a virtual PC. So basically, it's an XP mode as a virtual PC, so you don't have to do a dual boot. You just download an extension, and you can run all your legacy applications within that XP Windows, because Windows 7 did anticipate this problem. Just what you do, just Google download Windows XP mode, those words, download Windows XP mode. It will take you right to the page. You can download it free of charge. All your software will run without a snap, without a problem. Now, as far as your printer, you can, in fact, as you said, you can install a parallel port card in your computer, and you can plug that in. Now, if you do have a parallel port card, you use one of your slots, and you would use the Windows 7 drivers for that, because you're running the Windows XP mode as a virtual machine within a Windows 7 machine. So you'd use the Windows 7 drivers for it, and that'd work perfectly fine. But actually, what I would do, I wouldn't do that. I would buy, now that jet cheap, you could get a parallel port card probably for $10 or $15. But what I would do would be, I would get a Wi-Fi print server that had a parallel port. Now, and then you just simply plug your computer, plug your printer into that Wi-Fi print server, and then you've got a network-based printer for all your computers. That's what I would do. Now, the downside is that the print server, Wi-Fi print servers, are between $80 and $100, as opposed to $15. But still, that would be my choice. And I think you'd have a much better system. You could put your printer off on the side. It doesn't have to be sitting right near the computer.
Right.
Great question, and I think it's all that's going to work for you just perfectly. Email from Led by Brain. Dear Dr. Schertz, can you help educate me if a book is not a full textbook in Google Books? Is there a way to print out what is available? All I can figure out is doing a screen capture and print, and that's really going slow. Thanks, Led by Brain. Well, Google Books is a great way to explore and read a wide range of books. Many times you can get the entire book for free, but usually you just get a few random pages. And they do that. It was like a negotiation with the copyright holders. You get the whole book for free if the copyright's expired. In fact, the agreement with the copyright holders will not let you print out whatever is available. They don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to do it is to do a screen capture page by page by page, which is what you're doing. I mean, now there is screen capture software that makes it quicker, but basically that's what you're doing is about all you can do because Google has set it up that way. You're not going to be able to work around that. But still, Google Books is a great resource. They're putting a lot of stuff on the web. So very good. Great question. We have an email from Max Min. Now, this was a Facebook posting.
Ah.
Okay, now, guys, you need to go to Tech Talk Online Facebook page. That would be Facebook.com/Tech Talk Online. And you can actually suggest topics there. Dear Dr. Schertz, Jim's question, this goes back to a question you had. Jim's question about iTunes was informative. As a Verizon iPhone, I remember you wanted to transfer your iTunes
right.
from one, and I told you how to do it with, by transferring it from one disk to another.
Mm-hmm.
As a new Verizon iPhone user, I didn't realize that Apple had those restrictions on their music files. I wonder if they go for cloud storage like Amazon did, if it have any effect on their restrictions. I've always used Amazon to buy MP3. I've considered switching to iTunes since I buy all my MP3s from them. But iTunes automatically appears on my iPhone. I wonder whether I could get a way. An application to buy Amazon music on my iPhone. Well, Max Min, Apple is never going to let another competitive music store on the iPhone. That's going to be blocked for sure. You're going to be stuck with only the iTunes option on the iPhone. It's their cash cow. Now, when you buy any of your music, always you can pay a little bit more. And you can get the MP3 without digital rights management on it. If you pay just a little bit more, that is worth it. Once you get the DRM, you can't move it anywhere. But if you get it without digital rights management, you're always able to extract the music file, and then another music player can play it because there's no DRM on it. So, and then you can port it between different devices. Actually, I don't like iTunes because it has all these exterior controls.
Yeah.
Even when I own the music, I got to play all these games to move it around. They act like
it's their music.
It's their music, and I don't like it. So
yeah.
I can always work around it, but it's just a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Email from Arne. Dear Dr. Schertz, from this article, it looks like Stratford is helping foreign IT competition overseas. This is an interesting article. The article's titled "Tech Talent from India and Other Countries Leaving Silicon Valley." Any comments on Tech Talk? Let me read a couple of sentences from this article because it actually is a very interesting point they're making, and I do want to comment on it. At a time when the U.S. could use all the tech jobs it can get, Cornell Ball is creating hundreds of them in India. Now, the rub was, Cornell wanted to stay in the U.S. and build a company here, but visa issues forced him to leave and start Snapdeal in his native country. 400 employees later, he's ready to take on Groupon. The numbers speak for themselves. Snapdeal has $20 million in annual revenue. It's on a pace to get $100 million next year. He's hiring 70 people a month. What's happening? This nation is experiencing brain drain. Thank you for sending this article in, Arnie, because this is my soapbox. I'd like to move in the soapbox, please.
Soapbox is now
Let me move in the soapbox here. Okay.
You're in.
All right, I've got the soapbox in place. Now, I'm telling you, the U.S. has been making some very big strategic errors in terms of our competitive position going forward. It's almost as though we are voluntarily passing the mantle to China and India. First of all, India is going to have excess population around 20 to 25 million people over the next 15, 20 years. We're going to have a shortage of people by about 15 to 20 million people over that same time frame. The average age in the U.S. is 45, so we're not producing enough kids. The average age in India is 26. And so we really do need to get intellectual talent into the U.S. So what have we done when we are up against this huge projected labor shortage? We're telling the people who have the talent to start companies to go home. We don't want to give them H-1Bs. And so we're making the company and the country increasingly less welcome to those with visas. We're also making it more difficult to get visas. And so these are the very kind of people you want in the U.S., and we've got a policy that's keeping them out. I just don't really understand that at all.
It seems to make no sense.
Now, the second thing we're doing that's very bad, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the country. So what happens? It's better to start a business in another country. So if you want to attract businesses, you lower taxes to make it more amenable to businesses in the area. And so it's risky for startups here because of the tax situation. And so we actually are destroying piece by piece the innovation ecosystem that we developed that made this country so great. I mean, half of the new businesses that were started in technology over the past 15 years were started by people from other countries. Now those half are going home.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know why we don't change policies to encourage them to stay. Thank you, Arnie, for letting me move the soapbox off, you know, because, you know, we live this visa thing because we've got about 400 students.
Sure.
From other countries, from 27 countries. We help them get H-1B. We help them get OPT and help them, you know, get on that track. So we live that every day. So it was a great question. Thanks a lot, Arnie.
All right. Time for us to take a little bit of a break. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University, and now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
And today we're going to be talking about Hawken William Lee. Does that ring a bell?
No, it doesn't, but you did a nice job with that.
Hawken William Lee. Hawken William Lee is a web standard pioneer and creator of cascading style sheets.
Ooh.
Which I'll explain a little bit what they are a bit, but that's a big deal if you're a web developer. Hawken William Lee was born in 1965 in Halden, Norway. In 1987, he received a B.S. in computer science from West Georgia College. In And then he then from 87 to 88, he went to work at the OECD Holden Reactor Project. That's actually the nuclear energy agency in the country, and they were trying to develop new technology to make reactors better.
This is in Norway.
In Norway. Okay. So he did that for a couple of years. He was basically in the sort of the computer science side of it. Then from 88 to 89, he worked at the Norwegian Telecom Research Labs for a while, and then he decided he'd make his mom happy and go back and get his master's degree. Because his mom said, you know, Håkon, what, you know, why'd you stop with your bachelor's degree? I want my son to have a PhD. You either got to have a PhD or you got to be a doctor. So he went back. He enrolled at the MIT Media Labs in 1989. And in 1991, he received a Master of Science in Visual Studies from the Media Labs. Then he went back to the Norwegian Telecom Research, but this time he worked in the multimedia group because he just got this degree in visual studies. And he worked there at the telecom research and multimedia from 91 to 94. Then in 94, he made the move that would transform his life. He moved to CERN as a scientific associate. CERN was the birthplace of the web in 1994. He worked with Tim Berners-Lee and Robert Callot at CERN while they were inventing the World Wide Web. This is a case for guys, the right place at the right time. This changed his life. While he was working with them, this was back in 1994, he proposed the idea of cascading style sheets. Now, let me explain what this is a little bit. See, Microsoft Word had style sheets. It's not like style sheets were new. See, it used to be if you have a Word document or a document, you could format each letter or each word, and you could say make this letter bold, make this letter italics, and you could do direct formatting on all the letters. Now, there's another way to do it. You could actually assign a style to a word. You could say format this paragraph as style 1, or format this letter as style B, whatever. And then you have a style sheet that basically says style 1 is space before, space after, a certain font, and then it creates all the style features, and you assign them to style number 1. Now, the beauty of using a style sheet, then, if you want to change the look and feel of the document, you don't have to go in and reformat the document. You just change the entries on the style sheet, and the whole document changes. Mm-hmm. And so you've sort of decoupled the style specifications from the document itself. And that was done in Microsoft Word. Microsoft Word used style sheets back in the early 90s, and so I think he simply adopted the style sheet from Word, and he put it on the web as cascading style sheets. And that has become, by the way, the standard. It took a while before it was fully accepted and integrated in all the browsers. But what is impressive that he came up with this idea in 94. This was right at the very beginning. This was like just when Tim Berners-Lee had come up with the idea of the World Wide Web. Now, after he worked there at CERN for 2 years, 94 to 95, and then he went to work for the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C. This was actually an organization, a standards organization that Tim Berners-Lee started. So Tim Berners went to this and started this organization, and he pulled Håkon Wiem-Lee over there to work with him. And he continued working there on the cascading style sheets. And while he was there, he developed the cascading style sheets recommendation. They call it the W3C recommendation, and he did this with Bert Boss. Now, CSS is one of the fundamental web standards that had a profound impact on typography, on aesthetics, on accessibility in the web. Then, as a test bed to prove that it would work, he integrated cascading style sheets into the Arena web browser, which was sort of a test web browser that the World Wide Web Consortium had. Now, later on, because he got fed up with Microsoft not conforming to all the standards, he created a website called Acid Test 2. Now, the Acid Test 2, and you can just Google it and go to it. What it does, it runs the browser through all every possible standard that you could imagine, and you can look at the results on the screen to see whether the browser conforms to the standards. So it's an acid test for conformance to standards. And he really did this because he wanted to show how bad Microsoft was. he really has it out for Microsoft because they don't actually follow the standards as well as the other ones. He worked there at the World Wide Web Consortium until 1990. Was there until 1996. Worked there till 1999, and then he left the World Wide Web Consortium, and he became the chief technology officer at Opera Software. You've heard of the Opera browser.
Yes.
So he's driving the Opera browser there. It's headquartered out in Oslo, Norway. Now, his goal is to make a better and faster browser that conforms to all the standards. Now, while he was at Opera, he continued to develop and do research on cascading style sheets. And in 2006, he made his mom really happy. He got his PhD from University of Oslo. He started working on his PhD in 2001. And of course, as you'd expect, he was on cascading style sheets. So he dealt with the origins and the rationale and the theory behind cascading style sheets. And he was awarded his PhD in 2006 from the University of Oslo. William Lee, they call him William. They don't call him Hockham. He likes to go by William as his first name. So William. William Lee dealt with targeted Microsoft's Internet Explorer due to its poor support for standards. And he argued against the use of direct formatting of objects. You want indirect formatting using the style sheet, as I explained earlier. Now, he also, in 2006, started campaigning for browsers to support downloadable web fonts using a common font format. You know, haven't you gone, you sort of look around, and maybe you go to a website that uses a font that you don't have, and it displays in kind of a weird way.
Yeah.
So he developed a standard where your browser will automatically download the font, so then you have it. But it had to conform to this, and all the major, like Netscape and Opera, they all conformed to the standard in 2009, but Internet Explorer did not. I think the latest Internet Explorer finally did come in line. He also campaigned for a video element to make it easier to publish videos on the web, standardized video. He's all about standardization, trying to make the web open source, standardized, so you can deliver content easily to anybody, anywhere, and have it formatted right. He also promoted the concept of printing on the web, where you could actually take your document and you could print to a computer at home over the Internet. So he developed print standards for remote printing. And so he's really been quite an innovator and standards developer. In fact, his book on cascading style sheets, he authored it with Bert Boss. It was produced in HTML and CSS, but then he actually he produced the entire book using web standards, and it looks like it was laid out beautifully. Mm-hmm. And then he converted it to PDF, and he printed it using the Prince XML formatter. So he actually lived it. He really walked the talk. He uses it for everything. Now, as you probably would expect, he has a passion for making the Internet better, sort of like Tim Berners-Lee. I don't think he's making a lot of money out of all this. I don't think Opera is a big money maker. They're making some. I don't really know how Opera makes money, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. But he's got a campaign to make the web better, and he's really dedicated to this. Now, he's an interesting guy. He loves classical music. I went to his website. He has a personal web page, people.opera.com/howcome.
Mm-hmm.
He listens to classical music, and he likes to design and make furniture. He's designed a table. He designed some lamps, a shelf, a bathtub, and a sled. He flies kites all season, and he drives an electric car. His long-term project is to build his own pipe organ.
Well, that would be a long-term project, would it not?
That's right. As I said earlier, he's not driven by money. He wants to just improve web standards. Now he has two seasonal rituals that he uses to overcome fear. See, he's actually fear of heights. Every summer, he jumps into the water from 10 meters. That'd be about 30 feet.
Yeah.
To sort of like overcome that fear. And every winter, he races down a mountain on a snowboard. Last winter, he raced down the mountain on a snowboard. He had his GPS device with him, and the GPS will clock speed.
Yeah.
He got up to 94 kilometers per hour on the snowboard.
That's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. So I guess he's got a fear of heights and a fear of speeds. He's trying to overcome it.
Well, And you can, that doesn't do it.
You can find all about Hockham William Lee by going to his personal webpage. He's an interesting guy, and he's the kind of person who actually makes the world and the internet better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There you go. I always wonder, we've been doing this for a while. You can come up with new people every week for Profiles in IT.
That's right. There are lots and lots of people out there.
Yeah, there are. That's good. Well, we'll be back with, I hope you're paying attention, because free food rides on your answer to the pop quiz question. Coming up next on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
You know, this is more than just a radio show. This is a classroom of the airways.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I don't have any fight in me today. Of course it is. Yes.
It's a classroom because we teach so much content.
It's a classroom because you say it is.
But there is a responsibility when you're a student and you're in a classroom. You're supposed to actually learn something. You're supposed to be listening to the teacher. You're not supposed to be sitting in the back of the class,
doodling,
texting messages, and surfing the web. You have to be listening. So let's just see how well you were listening. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Hockham William Lee. Of course, the web standard pioneer and creator of cascading style sheets. He, of course, throughout his career was like fairly teed off with Microsoft Internet Explorer because they didn't conform to the standards. So he decided to make a test page that would test how well a particular browser conforms to the standards. What was the name of that test page?
Hope you're paying attention. This is a little bit of a toughie this week.
Yes,
you got
indeed.
The answer. You need to call us now at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. What does our winner win, Doc?
If you get the correct answer, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room at Falls Church or at the Karim Dining Room in Woodbridge. And soon we'll have the dining room in Richmond. You'll be able to pick wherever you want to go.
Again, the number is 877-936-9333.
Now, how did Bin Laden evade the NSA for so long? I mean, there was actually a certain technique to it. You know, Bin Laden, of course, they found his hideout in that defense community, very close to a military base in Abbottabad. Mm-hmm. And so this phone lacked phone connectivity and internet connectivity. It was completely cut off. But the Al-Qaeda leader did like to use computers. He did like to send a lot of emails. And this is what he did. He used the sneaker net.
Ah.
This is what they call the sneaker net. Now, what he would do, he would prepare his messages and his emails on his computer, and then he would save them to a flash drive, and he would give it to a courier. The courier would then head to a faraway internet cafe, And then he would log on at the Internet Cafe, and then he would send the outgoing messages, receive the incoming emails, and then he would save them to a flash drive, and then he would return to Abbottabad with the responses. So the physical courier of data, that's called the sneaker net, because, you know, you're wearing sneakers instead of a network. It's like a slang word.
You can't go to sneakernet.com.
That's right, sneakernet. And so it helped bin Laden evade U.S. intelligence agencies, especially the NSA, because the NSA specializes in intercepting radio and other communications. Now, the electronic gear hauled away by the assault team included 5 computers, 10 hard drives, scores of removable media, including USB sticks and DVDs. Some say that the forensics analysis is taking place at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. It's like a local action here. That's why I wanted to feature this today. Others say it's at a secret location in Afghanistan. I'm thinking they're here at Langley.
It's got to be here.
So he did quite the job here.
Apparently, I heard yesterday that they have gotten the mother load of information about Al-Qaeda, all kinds of terrorist stuff.
They do all of his handwritten documents and everything.
We now have somebody on the phone.
Okay.
Let's go to line number one. This is Lance calling from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Lance, good morning.
Good morning, Lance.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Hockham William Lee. He, of course, developed the cascading style sheets. What test did he develop in order to test the compliance of web browsers to the web standards? What was the name of that test?
It was ACID.
That is correct. Close enough. ACID 2. That is the ACID 2 test, but I think that's close enough. You're the winner. You win 2 tickets to fine dining to either the Coffee A or the Karim Dining Room. Do you listen to the show very often?
Yes, I do. I've been listening to it for... you guys were on another station when I first got here.
Oh, wow.
In 98, I believe.
Yeah, we've been around for a while. We've been doing Tech Talk since 2000, actually, on various stations around. So, very good.
You guys took me from working in the help desk to intrusion detection.
Ah, fantastic. Cool. That is fantastic. Right. So you're really moving up in technology. It's a great field. Right. Well, thanks for listening, and stay on the line and give your name and address to Andrew, and we'll get out those tickets to you next week.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Lance. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. You know, I spent some time in Costa Rica this last week, and actually was quite impressed with that country. I didn't really know much about it till I got there, but I looked around because I check out the technology down there because, of course, it was a business trip.
Right, of course, yes. Why else did you go to Costa Rica?
Exactly. Costa Rica, Coast, you know, I did some zip lining while I was down there.
I'm glad you came back.
Yeah, you know, they were about 200 or 300 feet up, I think, running back and forth over this valley.
I never know what you're getting into when you're gone. It's probably better that I don't know. I'd worry.
The zip lining was fun. I was actually checking for cell phone towers. That's why. I was up there. You know, I was checking for cell phone tower distribution. I was doing more. It was work. I was doing work.
Right.
Costa Rica is an interesting country. It's the size of Virginia. It's got an unemployment that varies between 4% and 7%. And they were able to make a transition from mainly a coffee and banana exporting nation to one that actually has some technology. And they were able to entice Intel to build a manufacturing plant in San Jose. They actually a pretty well-run operation. Costa Rica. Did you know that Costa Rica abolished its standing army in 1949?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they haven't had an army since 1949.
It's sort of like Switzerland. They just stay out of it.
And so they used all the money that would have gone into the military, and they poured it into education and health care. They have mandatory K-12 education down there, and they have mandatory English starting in kindergarten. So they really want that country to become a bilingual country. Now, due to the fact that they were so open and helpful to business, and they were serious about attracting business, the government convinced Intel to invest $300 million to build a factory down there that created 2,000 direct jobs and over 2,500 indirect jobs. Now, this is what they did. First of all, they set up a one-year certification program and a one-year associate degree focused on semiconductor manufacturing and microelectronics so they could upgrade the workforce. Secondly, they integrated high-quality technical curriculum in advanced microelectronics in their public education there. They revised the free zone law, and they established a tax-free zone down there, which would encourage reinvestment. They exempted and eliminated the 1% capital gains tax, capital tax for all companies. They had a fast-tracking system so that you could set up a business down there. They also lowered the taxes so that for 8 years there were no taxes, and for the next 4 years it would only be 50% taxes. And they had 100% exemption on import duties. And finally, they set up a fiber optic ring for internet access in the country, and they established a GSM cell phone infrastructure. In fact, only last year were they able to, you could actually buy a prepaid cell phone card. So, let's refer what they did. They worked on education. They lowered taxes on business to encourage jobs as opposed to raising taxes. Yes. And this is how they attracted the business there. And they've got an unemployment rate that varies between 4 and 7%. That is a well-run country. And the thing is, you can leave the resorts and there's no crime because people are employed. There's not this rampant poverty. This is distinctly different than, say, Jamaica, where it's dangerous to leave the resort areas. So, very good. I was down there, by the way. I have my phone. I've got this Storm BlackBerry, and I have both CDMA as well as GSM. And I usually buy a SIM card whenever I'm local, but it turned out the hotel didn't sell SIM cards. So, I put in the SIM card from India. So, I was roaming with my India phone number. And so I didn't want to make a phone call because if I'd make a phone call roaming from India, it was going to be 170 rupees a minute, which is about $3 a minute. To receive a call, 28 rupees a minute, that's about 60 cents U.S. Mm-hmm. But I could send text messages for 15 rupees. That's around 30 cents. So I didn't have email down there, so I was texting people with my Indian cell phone number in Costa Rica, and incoming text messages were free, and it worked just fine. So it was a nice trip, and I'm certainly impressed with it.
How many SIM cards do you own?
I've got 5 or 6, actually.
Really? And you carry them with you when you go away, all of them?
I keep them with my computer, but this particular trip I didn't take my computer, so I only had the one in my cell phone.
Gotcha.
So, now if I would have used the Verizon SIM card,
yeah,
they would have charged me probably 50 cents for a text message and maybe $3 a minute. But I enjoyed since people thought I was in India.
India.
You know, they said, oh, there he's back in India again.
There
so,
you go. You're in your own stealth
okay,
mode there.
This is the thing. People think I'm over in India working, and actually I'm down in Costa Rica. It's very clever, Jim.
I noticed. Well, the rest of us are back here slaving to keep your
empire going. The last typewriter factory shut its doors. I mean, this is big, big news, Jim.
I had no idea that there was still a typewriter factory.
I want you to guess where the last factory standing would be in the world.
Croatia.
No. India.
Really?
It was really surprised to me. Now, actually, I had to admit it, but I did my PhD dissertation on a Selectrix erasable, IBM Selectrix erasable, many years ago. And we still have an old Royal typewriter in the basement. But now, I don't use that for anything, but now the era has ending. The plant Godfrey and Boyce in Mumbai, India, shut down last month. They only have 200 machines left, and most of those machines are in the Arabic language. Mm. So these were basic. I guess they were selling it for the Arabic language. Now, from the early 2000s onwards, computers started dominating. So they began to notice a market shift.
Yeah.
until 2009, they produced 10 to 12,000 machines a year between 2000 and 2009. Their primary market, get this, was the government. The government in India was still using stinking typewriters.
Yeah.
That kept them alive.
Mm-hmm.
It was defense agencies, the courts, and the government offices. And I've been to some government offices there in India, and sure enough, they're back as of stacks of paper and typewriters.
Grief.
Now, Godfrey and Boyce has been around for 60 years. They opened when Prime Minister Nehru celebrated the typewriter as the symbol of India's emerging independence and industrialization.
Interesting.
For decades, the company was producing and selling tens of thousands of units. In the early 90s, it was able to sell about 50,000 machines a year. In less than 20 years, the number dropped to fewer than 800, and now the market's not enough to maintain the industry.
Yeah.
So, goodbye. Typewriter.
Interesting. Yes. Time for us to take a little break. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, and 1035 FM HD2. Stand by. More technology news straight ahead.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. Microsoft purchased Skype for $8.5 billion.
This makes no sense.
It does not. They announced it May 10th that they purchased Skype. Now, instead of trying to mash Skype into the existing Microsoft business division, the company decided to create a new and separate Skype business division with the Skype CEO, Tony Bates, as president. Bates will report directly to Steve Ballmer, the Microsoft CEO. Microsoft played up the synergies between Skype and its own communications offering, including Link, Voice over IP platform, Outlook Mail, Messenger, Hotmail, and Xbox Live. Skype will support devices like Xbox and Kinect, as well as Windows Phone and a wide variety of devices that Microsoft will connect Skype users with. Now, Microsoft offered no timetable how it's going to make this happen. Now, according to earlier reports, Microsoft was bidding against Google and Facebook for Skype. That's why the bidding went so high. Really too high. Don't you? I mean...
Well, Skype doesn't make any money, do they?
No, no, they do make money on selling Skype out calls, where you basically pay 2.5 cents a minute if you're calling another landline. Mm-hmm. If you're calling a landline, they do make money on that, and they sell fixed phone numbers that they'll make they make a little bit of money on. But it's not a big money producer. And remember, only a couple of years ago, they were saying it just sold for $2.6 billion, and so. I mean, this is it's certainly not worth more than $2.6 billion. Certainly, it's probably not even worth a billion, mm-hmm. Based on this. And so, and I don't really know if it's going to if Microsoft is going to be able to capitalize on this because Skype users like Skype. Who
right.
wants to be Microsoft Skype? Or can you imagine Windows 7 personal V over IP appliance?
That'll ruin it.
Oh my goodness! I just don't think it's going to do it. And the other thing is the underlying technology to Skype is really not that good. Remember, it's built on Kazaa, which was a peer to peer. It was actually developed by Nicholas Zennstrom and Janice Fries, and they had done Kazaa, which was a peer to peer file sharing program. And when they started getting when Kazaa got put out of business because of copyright violations by the RIAA, they said, "Okay, let's use this engine and build a voice over IP system." So they built it, then they started Skype, and then they sold it to eBay for billions. And then eBay tried to sell it to people, and then they discovered that they kept the rights to the engine that was the core technology of Skype. So it was useless to anybody except them. So they bought it back from eBay for a song, and then they sold it to Microsoft for $8.5 billion. So these guys got two paydays for the same company.
Mm.
So Nicholas Zennstrom and Janice Fries are pretty clever guys.
Yep.
And I think Microsoft got sold a bill of goods. I think they just, you know, sometimes you go, you get an auction, you just get all excited and you just overbid.
Yep.
So Microsoft has made yet another blunder. I mean, Microsoft has a lot of voice over IP products. I mean, you can go to Windows Live and you can do video chat. They already have all the technology. So
what are they going to do?
So they're thinking they're going to get the Skype customers, but I don't know that the Skype customers are going to want to be with Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Another blunder. Have you heard about the outage at PlayStation Network
oh, yeah.
and
this
Sony?
This is interesting.
Actually, they have teed off Anonymous. This is this group that of hackers that goes into things. And they're not really giving out much information, but they did reveal in emails that 77 million users had their information exposed, their username, password, and usernames and credit card numbers
to
the cyber attack. And the intrusion took place between April 17th and April 19th, and they noticed that something was going wrong when some of their servers started rebooting by themselves.
Oops.
Yeah, and they noticed, and finally, there was a penetration that went into all 10 servers, and then finally, the PlayStation Network just shut down everything. Now, in the course of the investigation, Sony found that the hackers were inside the Sony system. They managed to hide their presence from administrators and escalate privileges inside the servers. They were able to delete log files that would have shown exactly what they had done. They gained access to sensitive data. They used the Amazon cloud services to launch their attack. So they basically went in and they got an account with Amazon cloud. They launched the account from the Amazon cloud. That has since been closed. Now, Sony is going after the two guys who did it, and that is teed off Anonymous. So now Anonymous is going after Sony full bore. So they're in for trouble. Listen, we love your emails. We want you to email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'll get your emails online. Make certain to go to techtalkonline.com. We've got the podcast that's up there. We're on Apple iTunes. And visit the Stratford University website, www.stratford.edu, and tell them you heard about Stratford on Tech Talk.
And this show airs again at 5 o'clock today.
This paid commercial.
represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
The Nationals are on the air today beginning at 12:30. Game time is at 1:05. Again, replay 5 o'clock today, and it is 60 degrees in D.C. at 10 o'clock.
Commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that hopefully help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom.